So today I want to talk about the next catalyst that we might have in the economy. So what might trigger either a bull market or a bear market, or, you know, some type of crazy next big thing in the market? What will happen and what could trigger that? And, you know, finding the catalyst is very important, especially if you want to time the market well. And, you know, some people say time in the market is better than timing the market. And I think, you know, to some degree, that's true, except if that's all you do, you're going to become rich very, very slowly. And you're not going to be making too much money very quickly. And when I say this, I don't mean you should go in and day trade with all your money. And in fact, I actually found this one chart or this one graph that shows the earnings of, let's say, stocks. And most of the earnings of the stocks comes in the period where the stocks are not traded. So, you know, when the markets close, that's when stocks usually make most of their gains. Now, day trading could work if you're very good at it, and you certainly need some balls of steel. But, you know, for the average person who needs to fund their kids' college expenses, if you need to pay your rent, don't use that money and go day trading. And also don't use it to buy GameStop or buy Tesla or, you know, short some random company. You should not speculate like that, but you have to get into the right companies or the right whatever investments at the right time. You can't go in foolishly. And they say, you know, time in the market. Well, you know, if you're getting in right before the Great Depression, you could wait 20 years and you probably won't make all your money back. And so that's certainly not a great time to go in. And, you know, you could put in a lot of time and I mean, 20 years, let's say you get your money back in 20 years. Well, that's nominally. After inflation, maybe you'll have to wait 30, 40 years. And so you have to get into the right things at the right time, at the right price. And so timing the market is quite important. Now, finding the catalyst is kind of key to, a big thing in finding, let's say, recessions and whatever bear markets. And sometimes you'll have a catalyst that fuels a bull market. Although bear markets are much more common, there are much more common catalysts for bear markets than bull markets. And, you know, for example, COVID, that was a big thing. You know, that made the stock markets plummet. And, you know, that was also because the markets were overvalued anyways. And, you know, if you're looking at the yield curve back in 2019, it was already inverted. And so the markets were already due for a recession, except COVID, you could say, made it speed up. And that was a catalyst. And a catalyst is something that, I guess you could say, causes you know, either something like a recession or a bull market or something like this to happen. And to find these, it's kind of, first of all, you have to know, well, what is impactful enough? And it's difficult to find these things because you don't know what COVID is. You don't know how many people are getting infected. You don't know how many people are dying. You don't know how many lockdowns you're going to get before it happens. And, you know, we think that COVID is going to go away now. It's, you know, everybody's getting vaccinated and cases are dropping, deaths are dropping. And this is all good news. And, you know, I hope it continues to go this way. But for, you know, whatever reason, it's possible that whatever mutation happens and COVID gets worse, worse than it was during its, I guess, its peak a few months ago. And so you have to watch out for these potential catalysts. And what's hard about it is you don't know how big something is until you experience it. And so you have to be there early, and it's not always easy, but let's say 9/11, for example, that was a catalyst as well in 2001. And when you see these things happen, they're kind of like black swan events, which are basically events that you can't predict. And you could sort of predict that they will happen eventually, but you don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen, because there's so many big destructive events that could come at you randomly. And to try to find these events, it's very difficult, because it's like you're pulling random, you know, pieces of papers out of a hat. And, you know, on the piece of paper, it's like this destructive event, or a tsunami or a tornado or a terrorist attack. You don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the next world war is going to happen. And, you know, talking about the next world war, talking about, you know, a next catalyst, I think a potential catalyst you might want to watch out for is it's the relations between China and the U.S. And the relation here really looks like something that you saw back in, right before World War II. And it's also similar to the Cold War, where you have two very, very powerful countries and who are very, they're certainly not good friends, and they just want to push each other down. And when you have this, you don't know how far it's going to go, because you've had the trade wars, you've had all of this technology, you know, you've had all these sanctions, all these tariffs. And you don't know how far it's going to get. Is it going to get to the point where the military is going to be involved? Maybe. And especially if that happens, you really have to watch out, and you have to watch out your investments overseas. You know, are your Chinese stocks going to be outlawed? And are American, you know, are your Chinese yuan going to be outlawed? You still going to be able to import stuff from China? And these things, you have to be prepared for if they happen, because if you look at countries that have these tensions with each other throughout history, and I mean, I haven't been alive for that long, but if you really watch, well, I guess read about all of these countries who have gone to war with each other or kind of fought with each other, not necessarily like actual war through the military. But if you look at these countries with these types of tensions with each other, it usually never ends up very well, especially for its citizens. So I want to kind of resume what I was talking about. And that's some type of catalysts you might want to watch out for if you're looking at, especially stuff with China and the U.S., because these two countries are not friends at all. And they're also the two most powerful countries. And when you have that situation, you really want to watch out, because these guys are going to have further, let's say, wars, or, you know, whether it's trade war or some type of, you know, other type of conflict, and not necessarily a military war, but that's possible. If you have that type of thing going on, then you really want to watch out, because that is not necessarily a good sign for the economy in the U.S. or in China. And so if that's the case, and if you see some type of thing happening there, some event that could really trigger a recession or like some type of war, you really might want to focus in some other countries that are not involved in or too closely attached to US or to China and don't have too big of a relationship with these countries, friendly or unfriendly. And some of the potential catalysts that you might see in the US and in China especially is, I think Taiwan is a big one right now. You know, China wants Taiwan. You know, China says Taiwan's a part of China, and the US says, well, I think a lot of Americans say, you know, Taiwan's a country, Taiwan independence. And so these two sides are going at it. And if China wants to, let's say, take over Taiwan or impose more control over it, then the U.S. might get involved, because we know that America loves getting involved in business. America loves, you know, going to every country and just meddling with whatever social, political, economic, military event that's happening there. You know, America loves it. And I think that's a reason why we just bombed, or well, not we, but America just bombed Syria. You know, I guess it happens. And so if, I mean, Taiwan's a pretty big friend of America. And if Taiwan is threatened by China, then you could probably expect America to come in and to aid Taiwan. And the thing with Taiwan is it's sort of difficult for China to, let's say, take over Taiwan. And, you know, Hong Kong is kind of different, because Hong Kong, it's they're under the one country, two systems thing. But in Taiwan, it's kind of like, I mean, they kind of function more as a country than Hong Kong and China does. And another issue with, you know, another thing preventing China from, let's say, imposing a lot more control on Taiwan is you have Taiwan, which is as a place. I don't want to go into whether it's a country or not, but let's say Taiwan as a place is wealthier than China. Let's say GDP per capita. So what the, you know, how much wealth the average person has. Taiwan as a whole is wealthier than China as a whole per person on average. And so, I mean, if it was some poor, you know, if Taiwan was this poor place with, you know, nothing there, and they wanted more money, and if China could help Taiwan out by a lot, and then it would be quite easy for China to take over Taiwan. But it's kind of difficult, because you have this situation going on where the average Taiwanese is wealthier than the average Chinese. But if it does happen, that is surely a catalyst you could watch out for. And nowadays you have all these protests everywhere. You see it in Myanmar. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but you see it there. You had a farmers protest in India, but that I'm pretty sure that was a long thing. that lasted for a very long time, but it just came up in the news quite recently. And of course, in America, you have the Black Lives Matters protest, which I'm not going to talk about too much in this episode, but you know, you're seeing all these protests everywhere around the world. And right now in the world, I'd like to say there's no place in the world that is, let's say, that is obviously a good place. Let's say you go back 30 years ago. America was obviously a good place. You could tell that this place had, you know, a lot of growth potentials. It was a very individualistic, free place with a lot of growth potential. And same thing with China 30 years ago. China 30 years ago did incredibly well. Nowadays, China, if you look at it, you know, it still has room to grow. But on a long-term trend, it does not look like it's going to be a very, let's say, peaceful growth from now on, especially if you look at its relations with the whole world and especially with the United States. So if you look at the United States and its growth over the last 20 years, and you look at how much growth it has left to go, and if you look at its economic policies especially, they're not pointing towards a good long-term direction. You know, Biden, he's trying to give the whole world higher corporate taxes. The United States, the country that's supposed to stand for, you know, capitalism, that's supposed to stand for, you know, freedom, that's supposed to stand for individualistic behavior, trying to make the whole world less free, trying to make the whole world pay higher taxes. It doesn't make any sense. And if you look at how America came to be, how America became so great, how it became so wealthy, it became so wealthy by using the principles that are exactly the opposite of what we're moving towards today. And so America, and especially where the American economy right now, I think, is at its peak in the short run, I guess you could say. So I think in the next decade or so, I think it's reached its peak. Now, around its peak, you know, I'm not trying to time its growth, you could say, unless if some catalyst happens tomorrow, I guess I could say it's at its peak, but I'm not expecting that. And so I don't want to time its peak, but I think it doesn't have much more room to grow, especially in the nearer term. And its long-term trajectory, especially if you're looking at its debt, that's very scary. If you're looking at its debt, I mean, its federal debt alone is like 27, 28 trillion now. It's got all this state debt along with federal debt, which in total is around 80 trillion. And if you look at its unfunded liabilities, stuff like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, that is worth about 100, you know, some say it's like 120, 140 trillion, and that's with a trillion. And of course, so no one's going to afford to pay that. And you look at its economic and social policies, and something that's very important is a country's culture. The country's culture today is so, first of all, it's incredibly divided. And second of all, its culture is moving towards less hardworking and just a more collective and less hardworking and kind of a weak culture. And that's what you get when you go through a a generation of very easy, very peaceful, very good times. And so you have this kind of cycle where you get these strong leaders, and then you get these periods of good times because you have a culture that's strong, you have a society that is strong, and then after you go into a period where you have all of these, you know, good times, and from these good times, no one has to work nearly as hard as the people who've created these good times. And then you go through a period of good times that creates all of these people who you know, are weak, all these people who are incapable of reproducing the good times or greatly improving their situations. And then you go through a downward slope into bad times, which are then followed up, where these bad times create tough, strong people who are hardworking, who, you know, are let's say, not only talented, but are also very disciplined. And then these guys go and make times great again. And then after, you get these weak people coming back. And so you get this cycle where you just have, you know, this repeating cycle where you have good times and then not so good times. And I think we look like we're somewhere near the peak of the good times. It's unfortunate to say, and I could be wrong. It's a pretty pessimistic way of looking at it, but it doesn't look like we're going much further, especially with current conditions. And if and especially these are the times where you have wars. When you're heading into these tough times, these bad times, that's when you have wars. And I've just talked about the, you know, China and the U.S. I'm not saying we're going to have a war, but it's possible. And that's when your growth kind of resets itself. Because right now the whole world is kind of in a position where globally there are places, there are certainly places that you could see some growth. But no incredibly obvious places. You know, I think in places like Southeast Asia, those are some of the, they're some of the more obvious places that have a lot more potential to grow. But still, if you go back 50 years ago, there were so many more opportunities back then, so many higher reward opportunities with lower risk. Today, we have a lot more risk and a lot less opportunities. And I think that is due for a reset. And, you know, if you look at asset prices, that's also what I'm talking about. You know, asset prices are mostly very expensive today. And so, you know, it's funny because everybody loves cheaper stuff, but nobody loves cheaper assets. You know, everybody's happy when stocks go up, but everybody's unhappy when stocks go down. But everybody's happy when the price of food comes down, and everybody's mad when the price of food goes up, because, you know, they treat asset prices going up as a good thing and expense prices going up as a bad thing. But in reality, they're the same thing, really. And as long as your asset's not producing more income, it doesn't matter how high the price of your asset is, or at least possible future income. It doesn't matter how high your asset price is, because eventually it's probably going to come down. And that is kind of what I'm expecting of globally, of the whole world to kind of go through. It's kind of this reset where everything cools down, because in the past few years, everything has been you know, growing at such a quick rate that is not, you see, you know, real economic growth doesn't necessarily have to have, it doesn't necessarily have to burn out. But the growth we've had from the past few years has been growth due to debt. And that has to burn out because you can't just have more debt forever. And we've also entered a period where society and the culture has become less and less strong, you could say, less and less hardworking. And through this, we're probably going to see some type of global reset, you could say, in asset prices, in living conditions, in, you know, maybe even in the peace of the world. Maybe we're going to see more wars. Maybe we're going to see, I don't know what type of wars, maybe, you know, cross-country wars. Maybe, not talking about the running, if that's what you're thinking, cross-country, but I'm talking about, you know, from country to country. You might see some more of those. You might see some civil wars. I don't know. I mean, if you're looking at the U.S. right now, it's incredibly divided. I don't know if it's most divided in history, but it is incredibly divided, especially when Trump was on. That's when the U.S. was really divided. Nowadays, you know, the president's, you know, President Biden, he's not going on Twitter tweeting random stuff every few hours. So I guess people aren't as mad anymore, but it's still a pretty divided country. And so I don't really know what to expect. And if you're looking for the next catalyst, I guess always expect for the best, but prepare for the worst. And that is all for today.